Andantino Malinconico and before it Con Bravura, the first two of Saint-Saëns' set of Opus 52 Etudes, a set he wrote in 1877. The pianist was Piers Lane. BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio, and you can also listen to us live online. Just gone 3 minutes past midnight. Time for the early music show with Catherine Bott.
400 years ago, on the 14th of May 1610, France was plunged into a month and a half of mourning. Le bon roi Henri, Henry the Great, the gallant King Henry IV of France, was dead. The day after the king's death, his body was eviscerated, his entrails sent to the Basilica of Saint-Denis, and his heart placed in a heart-shaped silver casket for transportation to the College of Jesuits at La Flèche, a journey marked by solemn ceremonies in every town and city on the way. The royal corpse was then embalmed and lay in state in the Louvre Palace until the end of June, when it was transported from the Louvre to Notre-Dame in sombre but magnificent procession. Here's a contemporary account. On Tuesday, the 29th of the month, the streets from the Louvre to the Church of Notre-Dame were draped in black on either side, and upon those hangings were set the king's coat of arms and that of the city of Paris, with about an ell between them, and torches blazed on every house front. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the cortège set forth.
Thank you.
Lutenist Lutz Kirchhoff played Courante de la Reine by Robert Ballard, and before that, Pavane pour le Roi from the Philidor manuscript, performed by Douce Mémoire, directed by Denis Raisin d'Adre. Music from the time of Henri IV of France, who died untimely 400 years ago. The day after the king's body was taken to Notre Dame, the cathedral was the backdrop to a mass celebrated in the king's honour. The whole service lasted 5 hours and was followed by a 7-hour procession of the cortège to the Basilica of Saint-Denis, where it arrived at 10 o'clock for further vespers and vigils. Then, on the 1st of July, another funeral ceremony was held at Saint-Denis from 9 a.m. until 2 in the afternoon. Such splendid funeral rites received, as you've already heard, a lavish contemporary account, full of incidental detail about the coffin within a coffin, the cloth of gold draperies and heraldic devices, the ringing of the bells. It also states, helpfully, that the musicians included the members of every royal musical establishment, with shawms, flutes, trumpets, drums and so on, all of them draped in black. The only thing that isn't mentioned is, what music did they play? Material by the composer Eustache du Corroy is likely to have featured heavily in the proceedings. He'd been in the king's service for more than 20 years, first as deputy master of the Chapel Royal, then as composer to the Royal Chamber and superintendent of the king's music. Du Corroy's only surviving mass is his Missa pro Defunctis, written in 1606, which was the most famous requiem mass of its day. French tradition declares that it was this mass that was sung at Henri IV's funeral. More than a century later, in 1724, it was confirmed as the official requiem to be sung at funerals of all kings of France.
Thank you.
movements from the Missa pro defunctis by Eustache du Corroy, probably performed at the funeral of Henri IV of France, and performed on that recording by members of the ensemble Douce Mémoire. Well, kings have always had grand funerals, but this tremendous display of national mourning would seem to indicate that Henri's life had been a significant one. So let's hear the story. Henri de Bourbon was born on the 13th of December 1553, and although he was baptised a Catholic, he was raised as a Protestant when his mother declared that Calvinism was now the official religion of Navarre. At 19, he became King of Navarre, and 2 months later was married to Marguerite de Valois, daughter of King Henri II and Catherine de Medici. It was a dynastic rather than a love match, of course, and the actual ceremony had tragic consequences. Huge numbers of French Protestants, Huguenots, came to Paris for the wedding and were then butchered in the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre, popularly believed to have been instigated by the young king's new mother-in-law, Catherine de Medici. So Henri started his reign and married life in hiding. He stuck to his faith, though, and when he became the official heir to the French throne in 1584, a complicated story involving Salic law and the impossibility of a female succession, this sparked off the War of the Three Henrys, in which King Henry III had Henry of Guise murdered, only to be assassinated himself. Once again, our Henry survived the bloodshed, and he was crowned King of France in 1589. And to cut a long sectarian story short, this is the Early Music Show, not the History of French Kings show, after all, he decided eventually to renounce Protestantism in order to gain control of Paris and reign with authority over his country. Yes, he's the man who allegedly said, "Paris is well worth a mass." Henri is often referred to as Henry the Great, or Good King Henry. Perhaps the most revealing nickname for him is Le Vert Galant, the Green Gallant, a nod to his all-round dashing chivalry and attractiveness to women. That first arranged marriage to Marguerite was unhappy, childless and annulled, and although he sired 3 children with the love of his life, Gabrielle d'Astrée, marriage was not an option, and her death in 1599 cleared the way for him to marry Maria de Medici.
Compagni sue, la bella sposa.
Jill Feldman and lutenist Nigel North with an aria from Peri's opera Eurydice, written to celebrate the marriage of Henry IV of France and Maria de Medici. His second marriage and a second involvement with the Medici family, producing a work that's reckoned to be the second ever opera. France could relax under the genial rule of Henri le Grand. Instead of subduing contentious aristocrats with the sword, he paid them off. He was keen to ease the lives of all his subjects, which made him very popular. Another of his alleged sayings: "If God spares me, I will ensure that there is no working man in my kingdom who does not have the means to have a chicken in the pot of a Sunday." Well, I hope he said it, and meant it. After generations of Valois royalty squandering vast sums on luxuries and taxing the people accordingly, suddenly the country was well and economically run. The city of Paris benefited especially from Henry's reforming zeal. Among many civic improvements, he ordered the building of a bridge, the Pont Neuf, to join the left and right banks of the Seine, and he became a generous patron of the arts. Which leads us back to music. It was during Henry's reign that the air de cour, or courtly air, came into its own. And tomorrow's early music show is all about that most seductive of song styles. The king wrote a few songs himself, and following his most musical royal wedding, there were many grand entertainments at court. The French ensemble Douce Mémoire has made a speciality of the music of Henry's time, and from one of its CD recordings, here's music by Pierre Guédron, master of music of the king's chamber, and first, dances by Michael Pretorius, whose music came to court through the advocacy of his friend, royal violinist Pierre-Francisque Caroubel.
Sur le lit, je t'en...
Music from the court of Henri IV of France, performed by Douce Mémoire. The king was fond of dancing and theatre, but having returned to the Catholic faith he'd been baptised into, he needed to consolidate his authority by making sure that church music flourished. And if he really did declare that Paris was worth a mass, then Claude Lejeune's Missa ad Placitum is worthy of Renaissance Paris. Along with Ducoroy, composer of the Mass we heard from at the beginning of the programme, Lejeune was the most eminent French composer of the age, and he too held a royal appointment as Master of the King's Music. From his Missa ad Placitum, this is the Agnus Dei, followed by one of Lejeune's love songs.
Thank you.
Holy fire, fatal stars, all flashing in the eyes of my lovely nymph. Ensemble Clémence Jeannequin, with a song by Claude Lejeune, and before it, Edward Higginbottom conducted the choir of New College, Oxford, in a movement from a mass by Lejeune. So, Henri's reign ran smoothly, with contented citizens, enterprising trading and diplomatic ventures abroad, the arts fostered at court, and the Catholic faith established. But the more popular he became, the more danger he was in. There were two murder attempts in the 1590s, and finally, one day in May 1610, the king's coach was caught in a traffic jam in a narrow street near the Louvre, and a Catholic fanatic called François Ravaillac seized his chance and stabbed the king to death. As a contemporary account said, at the first blow, the king said, "I am wounded." But the second blow followed so quickly that he was hardly able to finish the words, "It is nothing," when the blood gushed from his mouth.
Thank you.
Music by Eustache Corroy, performed by Douce Mémoire, a fantasy on the hymn Pange Lingua, and a movement from his Mass for the Dead. So, the king is dead, long live the king. Queen Marie was left to serve as regent for nine-year-old Louis XIII. And there was, as I said at the beginning of the programme, a six-week mourning period preceding the double funerals. That's partly because the king really had been greatly loved, and his people were deeply shocked at his assassination in his mid-50s. But there's a slightly macabre reason for the duration of the obsequies. French monarchs were traditionally laid to rest in the Basilica of Saint-Denis on the outskirts of Paris. Unfortunately, the body of the previous king, Henri III, was still elsewhere. It was only after a month's lying in state for Henri IV that his predecessor was quietly interred at Saint-Denis, and town criers were sent out all over Paris to announce the royal funeral of Henri le Grand. There was quite a posthumous cult of Henri, particularly after the Revolution. In comparison with the inegalitarian excesses of the three Louis, Henri's benevolent reign could be allowed to represent all that was now deemed positive about France. And the popular song, Vive Henri Quatre, which he must have heard sung and played on Parisian streets, became the unofficial royal anthem of the post-Napoleonic Restoration. Let's end with this rousing performance of the tune, played by Capella Antiqua Bambergensis.
Hello and welcome to BBC Radio 3 Through the Night with me, Jonathan Swain. Well, for this and the next couple of nights at around this time, we're back at the 2010 Chopin and His Europe Festival in Warsaw, the festival's main purpose being to showcase the variety of Chopin's music while placing it in a broad cultural context. People he learned from, his contemporaries, those he influenced and so on. Adding a little spice tonight of various arrangements by Yuri Kane, among others, of the Chopin Opus 28 Preludes. There'll also be performances of his contemporary Liszt's Dante Sonata and a sonata by our young Chopin-worshipping Scriabin. First, though, the man himself, the second of Chopin's four ballades. The pianist is Philippe Jusiano. Thank you. Chopin's F major second ballad, and it was played there at the Chopin Festival in Warsaw last summer by Philippe Jusiano, the date to be exact, the 10th of August. Well, that same day, the festival was host to an hour-long Chopin Around concert, that's what it was called, based on the Chopin Opus 28 Preludes. In other words, various arrangers combining for their own tribute to and take on the Preludes. I'll credit the arrangers, and they're the performers too, after we've heard them in this first of the Preludes.